Now Movie Mole's Jan and Denise are here to review a film that also inspires awe. They joined the Skygazers this morning to comment on the solar eclipse and its different political and existential meanings for people. But their real interest this morning is to talk about Stanley Kubrick's 1968 classic film, 2001, A Space Odyssey, and how the film provides a way of thinking about the disturbing side of space exploration. The film is being screened in theaters throughout the country this week, many in connection with the solar eclipse, including at the Hollywood Theater. Their commentary is in two parts, and, like 2001 A Space Odyssey, there is a brief musical intermission.
Well, today here in Portland, Oregon, we're on the periphery of the path of the total solar eclipse. That sounds like a really mighty thing, but we're also, as we often are, marginalized by these events that capture the dominant culture, and there have been a lot of criticisms of eclipse mania and commercial exploitation of...
There are eclipse sales, actually, special sales, eclipse.
No longer for your eclipse glasses. Fred Meyer sold out yesterday. So here at the station, we'll be slipping out here and there during the show today to see the sky darken and then lighten again. But it's also important to recognize these moments when everyone looks up and sees something in the skies that we all experience that makes us aware in a very dramatic way of how we're clinging to this planet hurling through space, and we are affected by forces in the cosmos that are immense, and there's a sense of awe and I think fear attached to that for many.
One thing that it brings to mind for me is the idea of an eclipse which obscures something for a period of time and then reveals that thing again, and so perhaps there's a new look at it. We could certainly use a new look right now at a lot of things.
And there are a number of festivals, the Symbiosis Festival in Madras, that's drawn a lot of activists trying to think of the eclipse as a backdrop to, or an inspirational, a kind of a heuristic, you might say, a way of reminding us that things can grow very dark and the possibility of transformation, even profound transformation, how we think about the world and our place in the world.
Right, and that is really what the old mole and many of us who dip into that socialism world believe, that transformation is really the key. That at some point, whether you've been in the dark by will or accident or what, however, you can come out of it.
Come up and moles in
yes,
the ground.
Exactly.
Coming to the surface.
Yeah. For me, it reveal in metaphor, perhaps, that there are these possibilities. As you said, gazing and looking up into the sky, and you know, I take for granted every day that I don't fall off the earth, just gravity. I will say that I was much more interested in baseball than I was in space as a child, but I accept certain things, and yet as a mole and a socialist, I don't accept other things that seem as common sense. And so for me, I think of the eclipse as this kind of possibility for folks to begin to not accept things as they are and to see
and
that.
For some, it does represent a hope, the kind of the perpetual dawn. And in thinking about the history of the use of the eclipse in film culture, which is also, of course, very visual and concerned with using imagery attached to visual culture, both of us were interested in 2001 Space Odyssey because it has shaped in many ways how we think about space, both in the way the film takes up kind of existential questions and the hubris, the arrogance of space exploration, but also raises questions, this film that came out in 1968, that are still very much with us around computer technology, fear of creating machines that come to overtake us in their powers, the the role of the military in space and the anxiety of these forms of exploration that change us profoundly, how technology in the course of human history can profoundly change who we are. And yet, on the other hand, the film draws on this idea that throughout human history, we've created weapons that become the means of our own destruction.
And that's a good starting point with 2001, because as the film opens, we see the dawn of man and we see our monolith for the first time, and then the conception on the part of the ape to see a bone as a tool. And that tool is first employed, although we see a cut to a live animal that appears to be prey. Mostly we see that tool employed to beat another rival ape. And lurking in the backdrop of all of the space technology and all of the advanced technology is the use of that technology to control and intimidate and take power over others.
And when that film came out in 1968, there had been so much of the build-up to the moon landing, the race with Russia, with the Soviet Union, the Cold War Sputnik launch, where the Soviet Union seemed to have had an advance over the U.S., and that era when I grew up was fraught with the Cold War competition and the anxiety of both nuclear weapons, but also the scientific control over the world and space. So space became partly this kind of projected sphere that registered kind of ultimate domination. And at the same time, the Sputnik era was very much about competition around science, around technology. And it wasn't until the 80s that NASA and the space program became so militarized. Even in that era where 2001 Space Odyssey was being formulated, there was enormous competition around the space program. And it was very much, I think, a project that reflected some of the Cold War anxieties. You know, when the scientist first comes to meet with other scientists, he's meeting with these Soviet colleagues. It's a secret why he's going to the moon.
Not at liberty to talk about it.
Not because those who are on the station on the moon might suffer culture shock if they knew the secret of this monolith. And you know, the plot is pretty loose in terms of this monolith that was there at the very beginning and transcends time, represents some kind of transcendent force, whether it's God or ultimate nature or an idea. It's a kind of unsubstantiated signifier.
A marker for the move then now forward from where you are.
It's a sign of some kind.
It is a sign.
But it's never...
Or it's nothing. Or it's just a square.
Yeah.
Or a rectangle, whatever it is.
Or a coffin.
But all we know is it makes a loud noise when it's there.
But I like that aspect of the film, that there are a lot of elements that are not really developed in the way Hollywood films do.
It's true, and the pace absolutely contrary to what the expectation is for action and drama. I think one example of that is the point at which Dave and Frank are the kind of crew on the ship to Jupiter, and they're the ones who engage with Hal, the Series 9000 computer who goes rogue. But Frank has gotten dislodged from his... I just saw it again last night, but I still can't remember how Frank got lost in space.
But he was going out to repair...
Oh, that's right.
Repair a malfunction on the shuttle.
Oh, right. But that had to be a human malfunction. Couldn't have been Hal.
And so there was that interesting tension around human error and computer, the claim that computers are infallible.
Right, which is, another interesting
piece of this. Still
a timely topic. Yeah, timely, yeah. But, you know, some of the drama is created around that slow pacing of Dave and his very concentrated effort to retrieve Frank from deep space. And watching that, my sense is I'm now disconnected from the story of life in space, where you have the corporate culture of space, you have the father talking to his daughter via teleprompter or whatever that thing
is.
It's
a Hilton Hotel and Howard Johnson restaurant.
Right,
there
and,
in the space
and it's just
station.
Like, yeah, it's just life in space.
Uh-huh.
But
which
then
suggests too that there's commercial interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a stewardess who comes to retrieve your pen that's floating around because there's no gravity. Everything is very slowly paced, but it really does create this idea that there could be life in space. And the whole era is filled with TV and film that explore space, Outer Limits, and Star Trek, all of these things
the place
have been happening.
With that idea of mm-hmm. inhabiting space.
Right, the Jetsons cartoon. I mean,
yeah.
That you could live in space, but in fact, when we see Frank floating out and about in space, then that's a really disruptive moment. And that's where I come back to, you know, the idea of not just who we are, where we're going, etc., but how do we stay put on this planet at all?
Part of what I enjoyed about 2001 Space Odyssey was that, unlike so many Hollywood films, including films about a crisis in space, some meteorite or threatening force being confronted in space, even in the vastness of space, this was a very kind of lonely movie, and there was something very solitary about it that was unsettling, but I think in a way that countered a kind of manic mastery that dominates so many Hollywood films. You see, as this astronaut is separated from the mothership, and there are a lot of these fetal images, including at the end of the film, that
mm-hmm.
are themselves interesting about the human, and in this case, man's dependency on a mothership, a mother, and his vulnerability, and drifting off, and these small figures who become kind of lost in space and not retrieved. There's not a rescue mission here that succeeds. And in that sense, it counters a lot of the mastery imagery that still dominates a lot of the science fiction films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Alien comes up in at least one article I found, but it did strike me that Alien
film
is sort of the antidote, in a way, to a certain genre of,
you mean the
of
three,
horror
three,
and space.
There were three Alien films.
Right, so we would be just talking about the original Alien, the first one, in which just the whole shine of living in space, of life in space, is kind of taken off. The film was made in 1979. It's not about a hope or an inquisition or an idea that we could land somewhere and discover something. It's just a more cynical, a more devious world out there. And of course, there's an alien that is also a perfect being in its own way. But that film is an interesting counter.
Also a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
But you think in a different way?
Well, their computer system is Mother. So we have HAL 9000 and then we have Mother. But both Mother and their AI, you know, artificial intelligence embodied crew member is programmed to make sure that the crew does the bidding of the company, which is often been written about as a kind of merger of military and corporation. You know, it occurred to me through this last viewing of the film that Alien was a very interesting counterpoint to a film that seemed actually hopeful in its interest in space, but also cautionary and critical of the possibility for it to become another grand capitalist project. So
Or a place of escape or retreat from a fouled earth.
Right.
Is another another storyline.
Mm-hmm.
I was also interested in how Kubrick dealt with the hierarchy. I mean, there's a very rigid hierarchy, a military hierarchy on this spaceship. And of course, these missions are governed by a military hierarchy, a lot of military secrets. But the astronauts were not told why they were on this mission, and how the computer, the supercomputer, was the one who asked the questions. It was kind of funny. Dave, there's something about the mission that makes me uncomfortable. I feel like there's something I'm not understanding about the mission. And of course, it was a very fanciful representation of a computer that asked the questions. It's almost like how the computer was the unconscious of the astronauts, asking the questions they dare not, rebelling in ways they dare not.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting representation of this machine that is itself super intelligent, represents superhuman intelligence, but in that sense also questions. And there's this questioning of the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And the astronauts themselves can't really question what they're doing or why they're on this incredibly bleak journey.
There's nothing HAL can't do.
No, and it's a very kind of paranoid film too.
Mm-hmm.
These machines, it's like the panoptical presence of a form of control and omniscience that you cannot escape, that they could not escape the eyes and ears of this computer. It was quite disturbing in that way.
It's disturbing and amazing and funny. It's
a really incredible film. Yeah, and the last part of it was the imagery was very much evoked a kind of acid trip, also a period piece, a film of its times.
Yeah,
it was clearly meant to be kind of an acid trip experience with all of these lights and colors and coming into another zone of awareness, another dimension. And then at the end, it's quite confusing, but at the end of the film, it really is about facing death alone, is one way of looking at it. This astronaut is alone in a room created for him by aliens. And it's kind of bleak, but it could be read in many ways. One is about, it could be read against the critical aspects of the film, or as the outcome of this kind of arrogance and hubris, that you die a very lonely death in a very distant place.
Right, and in the pursuit of all of these moon landings and space travel, lots of people have lost their lives.
Yeah.
And I think about it and I think, are you kidding? I would never go into space. And I wouldn't bungee jump either, so...
It's dangerous enough looking at the sun in eclipse without protective eyewear.
God,
there's enough anxiety about that.
Capitalism gives me enough of a headache.
Kubrick's classic film from 1968, 2001 A Space Odyssey, is being screened in theaters around the country.
And the Hollywood Theater, they're featuring Kubrick for the month. 2001 will be shown again in 70mm. There'll be two screenings, so folks can look into that film and many of his other films at the Hollywood Theater in Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
All right. This has been Denise Morris and Jan Hocken for the Old Mole Variety Hour.